Hello and welcome to the Arsenal Beat. Defeat to Manchester City on Wednesday night means Arsenal have let their lead at the top of the Premier League table slip. So what next for Mikel Arteta and his players? I'm Mark Manbrines from PA Media, and today I'm joined by ESPN senior football writer James Ollie and Sam Dean of The Telegraph to look back on the loss and ahead to what it could mean moving forward. We will also aim to lift the mood as we close the show as ever with guest Laguna, but for now, let's dissect that City game. Sam, individual errors at the end of the day seem to be what cost Arsenal last night. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. I think in the first half, Arsenal were the better team and went head-to-head with City in a way that very few teams do. They were bold, they were precise in their passing, and for quite a lot of that first half, it felt to me like it was inevitable that Arsenal would not only come back and equalise, but go on and potentially score more. The issue with playing that kind of football against City and passing out and challenging them to press you and then to play through it is that it doesn't take much for it to go wrong. If you play 300 passes a game, it only takes one to go wrong for City to cause you big problems. And that's what happened. Tomiyasu sold Ramsdale short, and I thought the finish from De Bruyne on the full sprint, on the bounce with his left foot, was just superb. And then in the second half, it was Gabriel who played, I don't know, he seemed to sort of mishit it or scuff it or just underhit the pass. And that was enough to suddenly open the game up for City. And within 10 seconds, the ball was in the Arsenal net. The one thing I would say is that I think the tide had turned a little bit before that Gabriel error. And City had, at that point, grown into it. And Guardiola had changed his shape and taken Bernardo Silva away from Bukayo Saka. So it was potentially coming at that point. But fundamentally, I agree with Arteta's assessment that Arsenal effectively shot themselves in the foot and they lost that game as much as City winning it.
James, I think a few of us in the stadium were quite surprised by the way City changed the way they played against Arsenal. Whereas, did Arsenal show almost a bit of naivety almost in the fact that they continued to try and play out from the back even though it was getting harder and harder to do so?
I mean, City went longer than they normally do, and you don't know whether that partly was informed by watching what Ivan Toney did a few days earlier to Gabriel and William Saliba. And I thought Erling Haaland in that regard was really, really good. You know, he earned his goal on the night. But no, I mean, I mean, playing out from the back has got them to the top of the table. It's got them exactly where they are. And you know, it's taken a couple of years for the players to buy into that and really to assemble a squad that's capable of doing it. And I just think that, you know, the good news for Arsenal out of this is that it wasn't as if they were outclassed, they weren't outfought, there wasn't a sort of gulf between the two sides. It really came down to being able to execute what you do best under pressure. And City did that and Arsenal didn't, you know, and that should be what encourages them moving forward, that it's not as if they've come up against this unstoppable juggernaut that is on a different planet to everybody else. You know, I thought they matched them stride for stride for a lot of that game. And look, you've got to accept that, you know, City are just a more polished, finished version of where Arsenal want to be at the moment. They've won four titles in 5 years, and they know that quite often in these big games, it's not so much about going to win it, it's about not making the mistakes to lose it. And that's where someone like Ruben Diaz is absolutely, you know, vital for City, him coming back at that time and being such a solid, resilient, you know, defensive presence compared to two more inexperienced, particularly obviously in Saliba's case, inexperienced centre-backs, Tomiyasu coming in from the cold a little bit, and players who, you know, just are not used to playing in, you know, I did a piece on it, you know, they're not used to playing at these table stakes. And when you go up, you've got to trust yourself to do what you do that got you there in the first place. Otherwise you lose. If you start changing radically what you're going to do in the key moments, then, you know, you're not being true to yourself and you'll probably fall short. So to me, it's a test mentally for them now as much as anything. You know, I'm sure we're going to come on to Villa, you know, the Villa game and then beyond that, it's about, you know, backing themselves and believing in themselves to do what has got them to this point and not allowing what's obviously a very damaging result to impact them, you know, for the next few weeks. And if it does, you know, the title race could be over for them.
Sam, do you think once Arteta can take some of the emotion out of a defeat like that, he'll be particularly pleased with that 20 minutes, 30 minutes after City went ahead and the response Arsenal gave? Because I thought that was one of the best responses I've ever seen from an Arsenal team in the decade I've been covering them, to falling behind in such a big high-stakes game.
Yeah, absolutely. And as James said, they did that playing football their way, effectively. And that was sort of plan A. And I think right now, one of Arsenal's issues is they only have one plan, and that is plan A. But for that spell, plan A was extremely effective and very difficult for City to manage. What struck me, I think, when I was reflecting on it afterwards on the train home last night, is in a game like that, City had the flexibility and sort of mouldability to see the problem, which was Bernardo Silva at left back and Saka getting behind him and getting at him, and to fix the problem. Guardiola's got the experience and the resources, and his squad have the experience to change things up, to mix it up, to see an issue and then find a solution for it. Whereas I don't think Arsenal currently have that capacity. And I think it's been a bit of an issue in the last month or so in this four-game blip, that Arsenal play the same way, in the same shape, often with the same players every single week. And that is partly because that plan has been working so well and those players have been doing so well within this system. But there is not the same level of dexterity or flexibility or whatever you want to call it that City have. And we knew that before the start of the season. Nobody thought Arsenal would be better than City this year. And the fact they've got this far and have reached this point in the league table at this stage of the campaign is obviously testament to how well they've done. But in a big moment, a big game like that, Guardiola saw something and changed it. I don't think Arsenal can quite do that at this point, and that's partly what cost them last night.
Related to that, I think, as well, is we're going to, probably sooner than they'd like, we're going to start having to assess the work that they did in January, you know, the business that they did in January, and whether that was enough. Because Sam's right, you know, actually, I did a piece before the game talking about, you know, it was a sort of stick or twist moment for Arteta, in the sense of does he stick with the players that have got him to the position where they are, or does he just freshen the team up a little bit because it's shown signs of, you know, needing it of late. Obviously, the Everton result and then the Brentford performance were, you know, weren't their best. You know, this we all know they made no secret of it really by the end, that they went for Mudryk and they ended up with Trossard, they went for Caicedo and they ended up with Jorginho, you know. And we could do a separate pod entirely on the reasons behind that. And I'm not saying that was a failure of Arsenal's negotiations solely, but, you know, they reached a point where they decided to not go any further. And that was that in both cases. That was a judgment call they made. We're now going to work out in these coming weeks whether that was a judgment call that has enabled them to maintain their buoyancy, or if it's cost them a serious, you know, extended run at trying to win the title. I thought Jorginho did all right last night, and, you know, but I think in hindsight, the Tomiyasu over White call was a mistake. And I think most of us thought Martinelli wouldn't play. And I think, although I didn't think Martinelli had a bad game, he was quiet again. I think he's, you know, you put that in the catalogue of subdued performances, which, you know, is growing sort of almost by the week at the moment. Again, easy to pick the team the day after they've lost, I suppose. But it comes down to, you know, just speaking to what Sam was saying about options. You know, this is where you might want something a bit different off the bench to be able to change it. It's not, you know, Arteta's built a team that can play exactly how he wants. I don't think he has a squad that can adapt as well as someone, you know, the City, obviously better at it than everybody else. But, you know, that's what we're going to learn, I think, in the next few weeks, of whether that squad can be as adaptable as it needs to be, because the first team is probably good enough now.
And Ketchy's in the room. Let's talk about that. Last night, did it just show last night that Arsenal were desperate to get Gabriel Jesus back in this team?
Yes. Oh, sorry.
Well, yeah, obviously, the chances that Nketiah missed were not helpful. But the idea that Jesus is far more clinical as a player is not, it's not really a reflection of reality in the first half of the season. Jesus, as we know, brings so much to the table and is obviously a better option than Nketiah when both are fully fit. But the one thing that Jesus has been missing in an Arsenal shirt is ruthless finishing. So it feels slightly unfair to say, well, if Jesus was there last night, then he would have scored those three chances. It would be more accurate to say, if Jesus was there last night, Gabriel Martinelli might have had more of the ball, or Arsenal might have pressed better, or they could have held onto the ball a bit longer in those difficult spells, or, you know, all the other things that Jesus brings to the table that maybe Nketiah doesn't. So that one slightly rankles with me. But fundamentally, Eddie Nketiah is known first and foremost for being a goal scorer and a player who takes the chances that come his way. The fact he didn't do so last night was obviously a major reason for Arsenal not getting a point or three. And he will know that, and Arteta will know that. But again, going back to the previous point, they've got no other option right now. Eddie is it, unless you want to suddenly put Martinelli as a centre-forward for the first time in, what, 2.5 years, which seems rather unlikely to me at this stage, given the way that Arteta coaches and the specificity that he demands and the sort of importance of positional understanding. So that's what Arsenal have got. And yes, they miss Jesus, but not so much for this finishing, I would say. Can I just say quickly, just slightly, slightly off topic, going back to the previous point. In the first half of this season, when obviously Arsenal got 50 points, which makes them, you know, on course to be the equal best ever Premier League team. So let's not forget how good that was. They effectively had this sweet spot where all of the players were playing at either the top of their game or a whole new level that we had not seen before. Someone like Granit Xhaka in the first half of the season was effectively just a left-footed Kevin De Bruyne in his own way. And Martinelli looked like one of the most thrilling forwards in Europe, let alone a young forward, just full stop, one of the best forwards in Europe. It is completely inevitable and understandable that there would be some reversion to the mean over the course of a full season. Those players all hitting their top form at once was exceptional. And that's why Arsenal got 50 points in the first half of the season, which was literally by any measure the most exceptional return in their history. For that to maintain itself was always going to be impossible. So the question now is, yes, they've had a few dips and Odegaard has been slightly off it the last couple of games. Xhaka has been off it. You know, his goals and assists have dried up and they were very important in the first half of the season. Martinelli's falling a bit. It's only really Saka who looks as sharp as ever. It was inevitable that there's going to be dips. And the question now is how they respond and whether there is a way of getting them to respond, but keeping them physically sharp and physically fit. Because as we know, Arteta does not like to change the team much. And there is going to be a time, and maybe that time is now, when they run out of battery a bit.
Well, I was just going to say, I think he'd made, was it 14 changes to the starting lineup all season, which is by some distance the fewest in the Premier League. And, you know, you can't... That's unsustainable. You can, in today's football, with just how many games there are and the intensity of the matches, you know, something had to give at some point, which is, you know, the point I was trying to make about the squad earlier. You know, that is going to have to come into play in the second half of the season. And just quickly, I mean, this is probably the worst possible comparison I could make on this pod, but it just, what Sam was saying there reminded me of Son and Kane under Mourinho when they went top of the league in the early part of that season. And I'm not a massive fan of XG, but it is quite a good indicator in moments like this. And Son and Kane were outperforming their XG. It was ridiculous. Their expected goals and expected assists, they were just, it was like they were playing a computer game. They were just completely clinical. And exactly as Sam said, that it regressed to the mean and they fell away because that efficiency is just, you know, it's not human. You can't do that for 38 games. So, yeah, there will be, there's inevitably going to be some sort of drop off. It is a case of obviously how they handle it.
A And that does lead us in nicely to a quick chat about the title race. In a weird way, Sam, if Arsenal didn't go on and win it from this position, would they have almost been victims of their own success for that first half of the season, in the sense that Arteta would have snapped your hand off, as most fans would, for a top four finish before the season started? But it would be seen by many as a bit of a failure that they let an 8-point lead slip, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's probably, well, it is deeply unfair on the team and the manager, but that is, I think, going to be the reality of the situation. And I felt that, I think, for the first time during the Brentford game, in terms of the fans and the expectations and the response to certain moments in that game. It was a very instinctive sort of groan from the Arsenal fans, which became very familiar in the last few years before COVID, especially under Unai Emery and the latter years of Wenger. This sort of, but then the fans almost caught themselves doing it against Brentford and then stopped and quickly then cheered and chanted for Arsenal, as if to say, no, we're different now. It's all fine. We really believe in you. But that nugget of, I don't know what it is expectation or the thrill of the thought that they might actually win the league. It's infecting the fans' minds. Of course it is, in everyone's minds, and the media's minds, and everyone, because the dream has become achievable. And it's not just a complete fantasy as it was in August. So of course it would hurt the Arsenal fans if they didn't get it or they fell off. And if they finished third, for example, that would have been seen in August as an absolutely sensational season and just what Arsenal were looking for and wanted, target achieved. But now the context changes and the expectations have changed. And it was noticeable for me in the Brentford game that after about 88, 89 minutes, a lot of the fans decided to leave, which I didn't feel really happened in the first half of the season. And that's partly because Arsenal were winning all their games. So they're all there to see the win and clap the team off. But that felt to me like there was a real disappointment among the fans and everyone around the club at the inability to you know, push on further and extend the lead at the top. And yeah, it's funny how quickly expectations change and how quickly sort of perspective can be lost, I suppose.
James, that season we saw Leicester win the league, there was almost a dearth of challenges then. I mean, Arsenal finished second some distance behind them, didn't they? There's almost a need for Arsenal to capitalise, whether it's winning the league or if they ultimately finish second, on the fact that Chelsea and Liverpool are having such poor seasons, Spurs are not hitting their stride, Manchester United are rebuilding under Erik ten Hag. So there's not necessarily, I suppose, if they were to do something good this season, that's not to say it will translate into next season, because all of these other teams are going to be, you'd imagine, improved and up for the fight again, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's sort of exacerbating that sense of urgency. You know, that not that it's now or never, but this is a pretty rare situation where even Manchester City have been quite some way below their best this season. Liverpool are obviously miles off it, so are Chelsea. United are going to get better, I know they're not far off at the moment. The idea that they could win the league still seems somewhat fanciful at the moment, given that they don't even have a centre forward. And then you think of things like Jude Bellingham is going to come to the Premier League in the summer. Who knows where he's going to go, but it's quite likely to be, you know, one of Arsenal's main rivals. And obviously everyone will, you know, Chelsea will, you know, put another 10 players on 30-year contracts and, you know, go through it all again. So, yeah, I think it creates that sense of unease that there's an opportunity slipping through their fingers, I think. And that's, yeah, I know what Sam was saying. I was at the both the Brentford game, obviously, last night as well, and I sensed that. And I did think at 1-1, it became a test of nerve for everybody connected to Arsenal, and I include the fans in that, they suddenly started getting edgy about a team playing out from the back in the way that they'd done all season and been brilliant at. And I don't know whether it was probably the mistakes from the players that then created this unease in the stands that then probably permeated back to the players, and it just created this cycle where, you know, Zinchenko started giving the ball away, Ramsdale fluffed at that Rodri header that nearly, you know, Akanji nearly put in on the rebound, Gabriel obviously gave the ball away for the second, they just started making mistakes because there was a collective loss of nerve. And I think that is only going to be heightened by the sense of God, this is what an opportunity this is. You know, not only to have this these points on the board and be top, and also I think it's things like the World Cup. You know, they've had 5 weeks where they were top of the table. Obviously, that's because of the break in play, as it were. But they've been top for so long. Nobody wants to finish second in the way that they could potentially do it now. Nobody wants that. It doesn't matter what sport we're talking about. You lead a horse race all the way around, you get picked on the line. Oh, well, that horse was 40-1. You'd be gutted you didn't win. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. Five-set tennis match, you're 2 sets to love up against the number one seed. You lose 3-2. You've lost. It doesn't, you know, it's the same principle. And that's why I go back to what I was saying earlier, that it is such a test of nerve for a group of players and a fan base that has not been through this for so long. You know, it's obviously 19 years since they last won the league. Leicester was, when was Leicester? 2015, 16?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, it's 7 years now we're talking about that they've really been involved in a title race. So that's a generation for, you know, of people who experience something new. So, it does feel as though there's a real opportunity here, and they've got to remember that they've got a game in hand, that they win it, that they're top of the league. You know, I mean, it would be easy to think, because it was City and because of that, and that's why I asked Arteta about it after the game, just because that psychological effect of, you know, waking up on Thursday morning for the first time since November the 5th and not being top of the table. Obviously, in the manner it happened, losing to your closest rivals at home, that is a big blow they've got to overcome. And they've not got long. You know, we're, what are we, 48 hours or so away from kickoff against Aston Villa at Villa Park, against, you know, their old friend Unai. So, you know, there's no time to wallow in this. And a result there, a win there, would really, you know, would put them back on track. But, it's high stakes at the moment, and they've got to hold their nerve.
Sam, James has led us in nicely there to talk about quickly that trip to Villa. Is it a good game to play? Villa turned over quite easily by Manchester City, but also it's a 12:30 kickoff on the back of a tough Wednesday night. There's pros and cons to this one, I think, aren't there?
It feels to me instinctively like a pretty terrible game to play, to be honest. That turnaround from Wednesday night to early Saturday is a regular source of anger for Big Six managers, and Arteta certainly among those who feels that, and made that very clear last season. I think that was before the Man United game, perhaps. That was the day they played on the Wednesday night before. It is not ideal, especially after a game of such sort of physical demand, to be going against Villa and an Unai Emery who has already got one over Arsenal since leaving the club anyway, obviously, with Villarreal. So perhaps that softens some of the sting that he's going to be carrying in his tail. But fundamentally, he's going to really want to hurt them, basically. And I think Villa have all the ingredients in their team. And yes, I know that Leicester game, which you were at, I think, Mark, they were pretty abysmal defensively. But you look at the energy in the team, Ollie Watkins up front, the speed of Leon Bailey, Emi Buendia knows how to press, obviously, from his Norwich days. And part of the reason Arsenal liked him a few years ago was because of that energy off the ball. They could really just get in Arsenal's faces and squeeze them. And now, obviously, the risk, as I think, I can't remember which game we talked about this before recently, but if you're going to press Arsenal, you've got to do it well. And City tried it last night and struggled for quite a lot of the game because Arsenal are very good at playing through you. Arsenal struggled against Brentford and Everton, who basically parked the bus and said, go on and break us down, and we'll break on the counter-attack. So the question is whether Villa will do the former or the latter. My suspicion is that Emery's heart will tell him to press and his head will tell him to be careful. I haven't seen enough of Villa under him, I have to be honest, to make a definitive prediction on how that might go. But Mark, you know, do you think he'll press? Will he go mad? Kill him?
I did that Leicester game, and weirdly, there was some comparison to the Arsenal performance last night in the sense that three of the four Leicester goals were gifts from Aston Villa trying to play out from the back. And afterwards, Emery said, I'll always ask my teams to play out from the back. So I imagine, and this is the equivalent of a commentator's curse on a podcast, but there could be a lot of goals in an early kickoff. And we don't normally see that in early kickoffs, but I just feel that's got the opportunity to be a very, very open game in which Emi Martinez probably gets man of the match for making a string of world-class saves and then suggesting he should never have been sold by Arsenal in the first place. James,
and while you're here, he fancies playing Champions League football too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. James, what do you think of this one? Is it a tough test with Leicester on the away on the horizon as well? It's not two gimmies for sure for Arsenal, is it?
No, it's not. And I don't think you can overstate the timing of it, the 12:30, and also the fact that Villa have had a clear week. You know, that will make a difference in the same way I think it probably made the difference when Arsenal beat Man United and they had that midweek game to catch up on. It sort of come round a little bit for Arsenal this time. So, I'm sort of conscious as well as journalists, we probably get enticed by the narrative of, you know, Unai coming back to haunt Arsenal, and it may be getting caught up in that. It's perhaps easy to forget that Villa haven't actually been that good. So, you know, there's no... Theoretically, 11v11, there's nothing really for Arsenal to fear there, but it's such a quick turnaround after a big blow. And look, I mean, obviously we'll find out more tomorrow, but it sounded as though, you know, Arteta was quite downbeat about the prospect of Thomas Partey playing at Villa, which would be a big blow for them, obviously, again. So, you know, you're asking Jorginho to go in potentially to a game where, you know, away from home, he's going to... Sam's already talked about the pace that Villa have going the other way. That I've watched a lot of Chelsea when Jorginho was playing, and when there's pace going the other way, that's when Jorginho starts to struggle. So, you know, retaining possession and being intelligent with it, if it is Jorginho playing at the base of that midfield, is going to be absolutely pivotally important and will go a long way, I think, to determine the outcome of the game.
Time now for Guess the Gooner. I will read out clues and hints linked to a former Arsenal player, and James and Sam will take it in turns to work out who I am describing. James, given you're returning for the first time in a long time, we'll let you have the first guess from the first clue.
Isn't that the hardest possible point?
Correct.
So how is that an advantage? Ridiculous.
We've had some amazing rounds of late, so no pressure, lads, but it is time to guess the Gooner. I made a total of 160 appearances for Arsenal, but failed to score for the club. James. You don't have to have a guess.
Gael Clichy.
No. Would you like a guess at this point, Sam?
Wojciech Szczesny.
Negative. I made my Arsenal debut in 2008, coming on at right back to replace Fran Morida. Sam Dean.
Crikey. That's not sort of Carl Jenkinson era, is it?
It is not, and I will take that as your guess. James, would you like a guess at that point?
I can't get Thomas Bamala out of my head, even though he's left-footed and I think he joined late in 2008. So
sure. Other than that.
Yeah. No, I won't have a guess.
You would have been at that game, James.
Probably.
That doesn't rule many. That's probably every game since 2008, to be fair. I have won domestic cups in two countries, but none in my homeland.
See, the fact that he came on at right back, I feel like that's a red herring that he's not. I feel like he's a centre half, he's been asked to play at right back. Uh, think when Koscielny was later and played way more in 60 games or whatever it was. Yeah, I don't know. Keep going.
Sam?
I think I might have got it. It's got a feeling.
If this could be great if you got this.
Is it Johan Juru?
It isn't.
Ah!
But you are next with your next guess. I have won the Euro Under-19s Championship, but never represented my nation at senior level.
So basically what we're talking about here is a very promising young defender who didn't quite fulfill his potential at Arsenal, but went on to have a successful career after breaking through at Arsenal. Oh, 160 games for Arsenal, did you say?
He did play 160 games.
That's quite a lot. He must have been quite good. Never scored a goal. Ugh. Pass.
James Ollie. I think James may have fallen asleep, or he's just thinking. So.
No. Oh, am I guessing now?
Well, you can have it. You don't have to. I can go to the next clue.
Go on, man.
I have played in 4 of the top 5 leagues in Europe.
See, I'm trying to think. Do you have to name someone like Alex Song?
Incorrect, but I like that. That is quite a good guess.
That works in terms of the positioning. He came on a centre half, but wasn't really. Yeah, it doesn't. It could. It might not be. It's not.
I just can't think. It can't be a right back because it can't be. It's not Bakary Sandia, so I can't. I can't think who else was playing a right back at that time.
I can confirm. James was right in his suspicions that the right back is a red herring.
Yeah.
So he's played in 4 of the top 5 leagues in Europe. I was thinking someone like Danielson. I think that rules him out.
It does, and I'm taking that as your guess. So, I came off the bench in Arsenal's 21-22 Europa League semi-final defeat.
Say that again. I came off the bench when?
In Arsenal's 2021-22 Europa League semi-final defeat.
I think I've got it.
Sam Dean?
Is it not Ollie's guess?
Oh, is it? Oh, here we go. That's foot pressure on because Sam Dean thinks he's got it.
I think I've got it.
I don't know, Sam. Go for it if you got it.
It must be Francis Coquelin.
It is Francis Coquelin. Yes, you are right.
Whee!
Came off the bench for Villarreal, of course. 160 appearances, no goals. Came on at right back despite being a midfielder. He's won the FA Cup and the Copa del Rey. Won the Euro under 19 championships with France. Played in all of the top 5 leagues except Italy. And you only had 2 clues left. One was I was scouted for Arsenal by my compatriot Gilles Grimondi. And the final one, which I was hoping would give you all the answer, was in 2014, I had a short loan spell in the Championship, but was recalled due to an injury crisis. Sam Dean. See, what I'm trying to do these days is tweak it so we get it a relevant player. And obviously, he played under Unai Emery in that.
I remember that. I remember that Coquelin loan thing because I remember speaking to Wenger about it. And he didn't know that they could recall him. that came up in a little huddle after one of the press conferences. And somebody said to him, like, "Well, can you recall Cocker?" And his face is like, "I don't know."
Who?
Alex Song?
Yeah.
I can remember that. Just couldn't get against the game.
One of the players ruled out for injury that led to his recall, Mikel Arteta.
Truly is the circle of life.
The circle of life there. So thank you to James and Sam for joining me today. We'll be back next week to review the Villa game. Please remember to rate and review the Arsenal Beat and follow us on Twitter and Instagram @TheArsenalBeat. We'll also have our latest special episode dropping late this month as Max Jones presents a love letter to the Matchday programme with contributions from Henry Winter, as well as Arsenal programme editor Andy Exley and historian John Litster. Stay safe, everyone.